Broadcasting live from the Capital OTB studios, this is Racing Across America with Seth Merrow.
We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border. Good morning. Welcome to Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. I'm Seth Merrow. Thanks for joining us. And yes, Woodbine underway. Always fun to see them in action. They kicked it off yesterday. And again, I will advise people, if you haven't made a trip up there, make a plan this summer. Pop up the thruway to Buffalo and take a right, and you're there. And as I said yesterday also, if you plan it right, you can pull in a little Fort Erie action maybe and some Finger Lakes and have yourself a fun time. And speaking of Finger Lakes, Woodbine opened yesterday, Finger Lakes tomorrow, and a little bit later on we will be joined by the announcer at Finger Lakes, Tony Kahlo. We'll do a little meet intro and maybe get an idea on a couple of races for the Monday card tomorrow at the Finger Lakes, so keep that in mind. Also keep in mind that about a week and a half away, we will have the annual Kentucky Derby Seminar. We are, from yesterday, 2 weeks away from the Derby, so again, about a week and a half away from the annual Kentucky Derby Seminar. That will be Wednesday, May 3rd. You can watch it here on the network. You can catch it on the Capital OTB YouTube channel and some of the other social platforms. I'll be in the studio, Anthony Mormino. The Brooklyn Cowboy, Kevin Cox, also will join us, and we will take a comprehensive look at this year's Kentucky Derby, as we do every year with the annual Capital OTB Kentucky Derby Seminar. Wednesday, May 3rd. At 7 p.m., mark it down. All right, fun day yesterday, stakes-wise. Hopefully you were tuned in during the afternoon and enjoying it as we went through OTB Live. We'll be back again this afternoon with more OTB Live, taking a look once again at Oaklawn, Keeneland, some Aqueduct as well a little bit later on this afternoon. And speaking of Aqueduct, I was just kind of going through the usual suspects via Twitter to see if there was any breaking info to toss out, and actually a couple hours ago Andy Serling tweeted they're off the turf today at Aqueduct, so keep that in mind. Check out scratches and changes and whatnot, but off the turf today according to Andy Serling at Aqueduct. So otherwise, yesterday it seemed like a pretty nice day. Most of the venues seemed like sun was shining, and although I did read it was kind of cool at Keeneland, but the sun was shining. And let's kick things off taking a look at some of the Keeneland action from yesterday, as we normally do on a Sunday. Some stakes recaps, and yesterday there was a couple of nice stakes at Keeneland. Kick things off with the Elkhorn. A little bit funny, the favorite, as I was in here doing the show and watching the paddock commentary from Keeneland, Scott Hazelton, Gabby Gaudette. They do a great job down there, and Gabby commented, I think it was Gabby, it was one or the other, said a little bit surprised House Street was the favorite. House Street eventually did go off as the 2-1 favorite. I totally agreed. I did not use House Street in my mix, but the potential was there, certainly. Scott Hazelton lined it up as the horse had done okay in the Y League and now was moving up to maybe college ball as the analogy. And that was probably about right, because House Street, in a couple of starts most recently at Gulfstream, had looked pretty good breaking the maiden and going through the first condition for George Abreu. But again, this was fourth start of the career, stepping into stakes company. So I was willing to take a pop against House Street. The betting public landed on that one. Again, at 2-1, wound up sixth in the field of eight, however. Here from number 9, Verstappen at 16-1. Red Knight will run second, the 5. Another Mystery, third. Channel Maker, the Venerable Channel Maker, fourth. I will say, the horse I did use, Value Engineering, Just was kind of never in it at 3-1. Value Engineering's the number two. And you'll see that one pull up the rear. That was just a poor performance from the second choice at 3-1 Value Engineering. But Verstappen, Declan Cannon on board for Brendan Walsh. Horse was playable. You know, one of those 2020 hindsight kind of things, but you could have made a case, was last seen at Turfway. The Turfway horses have been doing very good, regardless of the surface. They've been interesting, and this one had run a nice little second behind Wolfie's Dynaghost in the Kentucky Cup Classic in the latest start. Had a couple of mile and a quarter races that the horse won just prior to that, and had turf races underneath, so had turf experience. You know, you were going to have to demand a little bit of a price, but you got it yesterday. And so, again, you could have jumped on a little Verstappen. Again, it wasn't in my wheelhouse, but there were some things to like there. Red Knight running second was perfectly logical, coming out of a win in the McKnight in the prior start. And another mystery, another one that I didn't use, but you could have made a case. I mean, the fact of the matter is you could have looked at the field and found something to maybe make a case if you liked just about anybody in there. It was that kind of race, which makes for sometimes fun and valuable results. And so, again, if you did use Verstappen, nice job there, $34.30. And, again, teamed up with Red Knight for a buck. The exacta was $118. So upset in the Elkhorn yesterday, kicking off the stakes action later on the Ben Ali. Nice field of I think I said something to the effect yesterday, kind of second string handicap horses, and had the potential to kind of move up and make themselves notable in the division, and the winner might have done that. I mentioned as I was handicapping, I liked Rattle and Roll last year as a three-year-old and wound up winning, I think, three derbies, the Oklahoma Derby, the St. Louis Derby, and the American Derby. And so kind of a second-tier three-year-old, but with some talent and potential for Kenny McPeak, came back and debuted this year as a four-year-old in the New Orleans Classic and ran fourth, but did it with a triple-digit buyer. And so it was going to be interesting to see how he progressed in the second start in the four-year-old season. I took a pop with Pioneer of Medina, who also now a four-year-old, Todd Pletcher trainee, had run well a couple of starts prior in the Mineshaft, had tossed in a triple-digit in the Harlan's Holiday. The favorite was Skippy Longstocking at, 9-5 and 8-5. And that one wound up fifth. I had Skippy Longstocking in the second slot. But it is the number five, Rattle and Roll. Looking pretty good. I mean, the chart margin here is over a length. Running second is Call Me Fast at 16-1, the longest price on the board. And Pioneer Medina, the one, just can't hold on here for second. That might have been a nice little exacta for me. I played around a little bit with that because as I was looking, I thought, yeah, Rattle and Roll is kind of interesting. But, again, got just nipped there. For a second with Call Me Fast. But Rattle and Roll, Brian Hernandez. After the race, Scott Hazleton in the winner's circle or out on the turf course where they hand out the trophies, interviewed Ken McPeak. And Scott asked about the first start of the year where the horse ran fourth. And Ken said it just needed that start. I mean, it was a November, early November until late March layoff. And Ken said, yeah, we needed that one. He improved off of that. And then Ken kind of tipped his cap to his assistant at Churchill, the horse's groom. He said they both took really good care of the horse. And coming into the race in the paddock, their comments were, we're going to win today. Ken said, I felt pretty good about that. And They were right, and this horse lived up to it. So Rattle and Roll now, again, kind of interesting as a three-year-old last year, picking the spots, and now as a four-year-old with the second start of the four-year-old season, moving forward a little bit and winning the Ben Ali yesterday. As I said, could be an interesting player going forward. The race had that feel of, you know, kind of second-tier potential handicapping horses with the ability to maybe step up a little bit and rattle and roll amongst the group was the one that stepped up. So we'll see what they have in store going forward. Ken McPeak with a good horse. As he did last year, they may pick their spots and just be clever with the horse. But Ken McPeak certainly shows up with good horses right up the turnpike at Saratoga. So we will see. And we have a couple of very nice races for handicap horses. And we will, as we go through some of the other action, we will see the potential of Saratoga coming up. But let's move now to Oaklawn. And a nice series of three stakes races yesterday at Oaklawn. We had Nancy Holthus on with us yesterday talking about these three races. And Valley of the Vapors will kick things off. $150,000 ungraded stake for the three-year-old fillies going a mile. I found Exponential Star kind of interesting. Third career start, had just broken the maiden in the prior start, but big improvement start one to start two. The improvement was with a stretch out to two turns, so seemed to benefit from the experience of the debut, seemed to appreciate the two turns. It was 10-strike racing, Marshall Graham. And I thought Exponential Star was going to be a little bit interesting. Went off at 7-1. Exponential Star was kind of interesting, but Nancy said, and that the one to beat was Merlaza, the number two. But as we see, come into the lane, it is number seven, Pink Ace, but you see Exponential Star, the nine, making a move, and I think, oh, and then Merlaza goes on by. An Exponential Star, I thought, had the momentum to get up and at least get in the exacta. Didn't, but ran an okay third at 7-1. But Merlaza was just too good. Pink Ace at 46-1, who again had the lead most of the way around, winds up second and holds on. You know, gutsy holding off the oncoming Exponential Star for the place position. But it is Merlaza going out for Brad Cox. Merlaza, kind of a, maybe you'd be fair in saying late developing three-year-old filly. This is one who may play up at Saratoga, you would have to think. Again, see where they pick their spots and how the big guns pan out. But you would think this horse will at some point step up to face the big guns, because so far came into this race, Merlaza, with three starts down at the fairgrounds. The debut effort, a just missed second. Broke the maiden very nicely in the second career start, and then went through the first condition last time in fine fashion. Now in the fourth start of the career, steps into stakes company, and you saw there, that was a nice-looking win. Nice stretch run, gets it done at 3-5 for Brad Cox and Don Alberto Stable. And again, Joel Rosario on board, remember that name. We'll talk about it a little more at Oaklawn for Saturday. But again, this is clearly a three-year-old filly to keep our eyes on, a three-year-old filly with potential. And as I say, a little bit late developing, you know, kind of kicked the season off. A January start, a February start, a March start, now an April start. But this was the stakes debut. They logically went through the maiden special and then the first condition and then stepped into stakes company. So again, you know, breaking into the stakes in April is, I think, by definition, a little bit late developing for a three-year-old. And we shall see where the horse goes from here, but certainly has looked good so far to give the impression that, as I say, the big guns are probably going to be in her sights sooner rather than later. Speaking of the big guns in the handicap division, some of them stepping it up in the Oaklawn Handicap Grade 2 event. $1 million up for grabs, 9 furlongs, the trip. I went back and forth when I handicapped this race because in the Essex, back in the middle of March, I liked Classic Causeway and ran well to be second, but just could not hold off Last Samurai for Wayne Lucas, who won the Razorback earlier in the season, then the Essex. And so off of those two performances, I couldn't get away from Last Samurai, really. So I put Last Samurai on top, Classic Causeway. I had Charge It in the third spot, and then Proxy for Mike Stidham coming off a close-up second-place finish in the Santa Anita Handicap was in the fourth spot for me. Had been beaten in the Santa Anita Handicap by Stiletto Boy, who was also in the mix yesterday. And it was Proxy getting it done. Proxy by a head. This is a ding-dong finish. Michael Stidham was quoted after the race, something to the effect of, hey, I think I need some oxygen after that one, because obviously there, and you can see there, there's a little bit of something going on. The stewards took a look and didn't change anything. Subsequently, Christian Torres, who was on Last Samurai, and boy, you can see blanket finish there. Christian Torres said there was a bump from Stiletto Boy that he thought cost him. But again, the stewards took a look and made no change. So it is Proxy getting it done by a head. Last Samurai winds up second by a nose, and Stiletto Boy third. So again, nice first and third for the horses coming out of the Santa Anita Handicap. I was a little bit disappointed with Classic Causeway. You know, his thing is to get the lead. He didn't. Stiletto Boy was up there, so he was kind of just off the lead much of the way and then faded to sixth. And Charge It, I was a little bit surprised. I had Charge It down in the third spot. But it is Todd Pletcher, Luis Saez, and a horse that has throughout the career shown a little bit of potential, but with only the seven starts going into yesterday, hasn't really been able to show it necessarily. But again, with some veterans in there, like Last Samurai coming into the race in such good form, surprised to see Charge It go off as the 9-5 favorite. Winds up fifth in the field of seven in there. That had to be a disappointment for the connections of Charge It. But not so for the connections of Proxy. I looked up this morning, according to what I read, a 103 buyer, very solid number. Proxy had tossed at least a couple of triple-digit buyers in earlier in the career, going back to the win last fall in the Clark. That was a 101. Speaking of the win in the Clark, looks like Mike Stidham, after the race, stated probably head back to the Stephen Foster at Churchill, the Clark obviously at Churchill, but this horse had run third in the Stephen Foster last year. Stephen Foster typically right around Independence Day, and he said, you know, that'll be our game plan to head to the Stephen Foster, but then he said, on the Saratoga in the summer. So again, we shall see, you know, Woodward, Whitney sitting out, or Jockey Club now, Whitney sitting out there for a Proxy potentially. So again, we've been saying it for a few weeks now, as we look at some of these late winter, spring, early summer races, they will certainly play into our backyard up here at Saratoga, and it looks like that is going to be the case for the Oaklawn Handicap. And Wayne Lucas typically up there in the summertime, so I wouldn't be shocked to see Last Samurai on the way as well. And he ran well. And again, Torres thought, maybe a little of the action there in the stretch cost him. And Last Samurai just a head back. That was a nice finish for all three up there. And again, the 103 buyer, absolutely solid. And again, I will mention, we mentioned on board Merlaza in the Valley of the Vapors, Joel Rosario on board Proxy in the Oaklawn Handicap. So you get to the bathhouse row for the three-year-old boys, and you look and you say, who is Joel Rosario on here? Red Route 1, and that's the horse I liked. I was looking for a rebound. He just had run so well with big closing efforts in the Southwest behind Arabian Night and in the Rebel behind Confidence Game. The Arkansas Derby performance was a little bit inexplicable. What do you make of that? Which direction do you go? I went in. I think he's better than that. I'm going to go with a rebound with Red Route 1. The bathhouse row yesterday for the three-year-old boys, $200,000, a mile and eighth. It's a Preakness win and you're in. Red Route 1 is the number four, doing his typical come from behind. And you can see Joel Rosario working, working, working. The number nine is Tappet Shoes. The number six is Victory Formation. You think he's going to get up here? It's hard to say. It's hard to say. And he does. By chart margin, winds up to be ahead, amazingly. 2-1 is the second choice. Victory Formation for Brad Cox was the 8-5 favorite. Tappet Shoes, who ran second for Brad Cox, was the 5-1 fourth choice, actually. Victory Formation took the favoritism with a good record, and part of that, I'm sure, was trained by Brad Cox, had some appeal, but ran a disappointing ninth behind Angel of Empire in the Risen Star. However, prior to that, Victory Formation had won the Smarty Jones. So I'm sure that played into, you know, a lot of people were thinking like I was with Red Route 1. We'll get a rebound here, but also returning to a track where the horses already won a stakes race. So Victory Formation ran, very well, was right up there in the hunt, but it was the other Brad Cox horse completing the exact at Tappet Shoes, who was trying stakes company for the first time. Only one win, maiden breaker at the fairgrounds back in December. Had tried the conditional races, the first condition in the last couple of starts. The last start back in February, just missed with a 90 buyer. And then the stakes debut yesterday. I think that tabs Tappet Shoes as one to kind of keep our eyes on as well. But Red Route 1, Steve Asmussen after the race said it was nice to see him, you know, get a stakes victory. He'd been knocking on the door in various stakes, including that second in the Rebel and the Southwest. Again, it's a Preakness win and you're in. Asmussen after the race said whether we go to the Preakness is going to depend on how Disarm does in the Derby. It's the same connections. It's obviously Asmussen, but Winchell Thoroughbreds, they have Disarm, who eked in with the third place finish in the Lexington, so just got in on points. So Asmussen said, we'll see what Disarm does in the Derby and then kind of make a decision whether we will take advantage of the Preakness win and you're in. From what I read, a 92 buyer for Red Route 1, which ties his lifetime best. And the win, kind of amazing that you do it in a nice little stakes race, but the win made Steve Asmussen the all-time winningest trainer at Oaklawn. On Friday, he had tied the record. Talked a little bit about that with Nancy Holthus yesterday. Tied the record of her father-in-law, I believe. But with the stakes victory yesterday, breaks the record, becomes the all-time winningest trainer at Oaklawn with 868 wins at Oaklawn. Pretty solid number. But in the article I was reading in the racing form, the follow-up, I'm assuming Mary Rampolini probably, it said this is kind of incredible too. Not only now Steve Asmussen the leading trainer at Oaklawn, but according to the article, he's also the leading trainer at Churchill Downs, Lone Star, Remington, and Sam Houston, the all-time leading trainer at those four other tracks, which is kind of incredible. But again, on board Joel Rosario, someday for Joel, three stakes races at Oaklawn, sweeps the three stakes races. So a nice day for Joel Rosario down in Arkansas. And before we wrap up our replays, let's take a look in New York. A couple of stakes. I like Balloon Eye, or Chris Griffin had the better pronunciation. He put the emphasis on the end. Balloon Eye, I think. I think he's got it. Because pregame show, and I think I was even saying Balloony. That's Balloon Eye, I think, is probably more correct. As I say, I'm stealing that from Chris Griffin. Regardless of how you pronounce it, the Chad Brown, Michael Dubb and Company runner started the career in Europe, came to the United States, ran seventh in the Colonel Liam back in March down at Gulfstream. I thought the horse had the potential to move forward from that with the United States experience under the belt. And he does. We'll see the stretch run here. Number four horse, Jose Ortiz on board. Kind of waiting for room. You can see him there behind the first flight. When room shows up, you can see him blast through one from the rail and then just has the momentum. Belunai gets it done. Inflation Nation, number five, second. And then Neural Network, trying the turf, runs third for Chad Brown. But a nice win by the winner, also trained by Chad Brown. Jose Ortiz on board. Again, second start in the United States, but it looks like the potential is there to have a nice little turf career going forward. And we also had yesterday the New York Stallion Series for a couple $100,000, 6.5 furlongs. I liked East Coast Girl and look for her to maybe try to steal it on the front end from the rail. And I felt like at 3-1, She ran a good race, and I thought coming into the stretch, yeah, might get it done here. East Coast Girl is going to be the number one horse under Jose Ortiz, but having led much of the way, and I thought she was going to gut it out. Here she kind of moves, gets away just a little bit, and it looks like, oh, she's going to gut this out all right. And then the momentum from a couple others gets going. Running second will be number five, Bank Frenzy, but the winner will be number three, Lifetime of a Chance. And I said when I handicapped the race, it was hard to know what to do with Lifetime of a Chance, who in the previous start had broken the maiden with a 91 buyer, which towered over the field. But it was such an aberration on the page that I wasn't quite sure, do I believe it or not believe it? I've been looking. I haven't seen a number on yesterday's race because I'd like to see. And she didn't necessarily have to get to that 91 to get that victory yesterday. And didn't, you know, in the previous start, the 91 buyer race, she won by 16 against maidens. Yesterday, the chart margin was a neck. So I'm imagining probably didn't match up to that, but still ran well. Going from the maiden race into that stakes race yesterday. And again, got it done late. East Coast Girl, again, a little bit disappointing. I thought she was going to keep going, but just got a little short late and wound up third. Bank Frenzy, as they say, running second. But nice performance. You know, again, kind of validated that big number win last time. But again, did it in the sixth career start, and the other five weren't like that. So hard to kind of, again, I'm going to be searching all day today to see if they, somewhere on the internet, the number gets updated, because I'd love to see what Lifetime of Chance ran yesterday. All right, we'll take a break. Come back. I've got some tape pieces that Jenny Reese did. We showed one or two yesterday that she had done Thursday. She's out there for the Kentucky Horsemen's Association on the backstretch at Churchill, keeping up with some of the connections of Derby contenders. And there were some workouts Friday that were notable, and she followed up on some of those. So we'll come back. We'll see some of those interviews with the connections of notable connections of Derby contenders, and get some of their thoughts on Friday morning works. And we'll show some of those, as I say, when we come back. But a little bit later on, opening day at Finger Lakes tomorrow. So we'll be joined a little bit later on by Tony Kahlo. Stay tuned for all of it right after this.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
It's that time of year.
Forte wins!
Angel of Empire wins the Arkansas Derby and wins it clear.
Practical Move has won the Run Happy Santa Anita Derby.
Join us on Wednesday, May 3rd at 7 p.m. for the annual Capital OTB Kentucky Derby Seminar. Streaming live on the Capital OTB YouTube channel and other social platforms. Join Seth Merrill, Anthony Mormito, and the Brooklyn Cowboy Kevin Cox for a comprehensive look at this year's Kentucky Derby.
Stone is an outside front. They're coming down to the finish. Can Smarty Jones hold on? Here comes Birdstone. Birdstone surges past. Birdstone wins the Belmont Stakes.
In front, but here comes High Chaparral. High Chaparral, the defending champ, to take it to Balba. These two are travels head to head with Joe Hart bearing down on them. It's going to be a three-horse photo finish in the turn. Here's the wire. Photo finish.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Let's kick it off. We heard from Todd Pletcher. I pulled up one of the tape pieces from Jenny Reese yesterday because he had some horses out on the track Thursday. But he had more official works on Friday for some of his Derby contenders, Forte and Tappet Trace. And subsequently, there's an article from Mike Welch in the Racing Forum, who's now in Kentucky looking at Derby workers, who said Forte and Tappet Trace looked good working on Friday, but then they were out just doing a gallop and looked pretty good yesterday as well. But Jenny Reese caught up with Todd Pletcher after his workers on Friday, so let's take a listen, see what Todd had to think of the works on Friday.
How'd your guys look today?
Excellent. Yeah, I thought we had a perfect morning. Horses worked really well. Seemed to handle the track great. Very happy.
Specifics on each one, maybe?
You know, Tapid Tri started out, win a half. Good steady breeze throughout. Was on the bridle, traveling well in hand. Seemed to get over the track really comfortably. You know, sometimes when you come in here, you'll see horses kind of bobble a little bit and the ground will break away from them. And I thought in Tapit Trice's case and Forte's, they were perfect. Yeah. So happy to see that.
How much improvement have you seen and how would we judge it in Forte from he's 2 for 2 at 3 and then he was a Breeders' Cup and Eclipse champion at 2? I mean, are you seeing the progression and how's that manifesting itself?
Well, I mean, if you kind of look at his progression number-wise, if you're a sheep follower, you know, he's kind of made those little steps forward each start. Same thing with Tapit Trice. And, you know, what I'm encouraged by with both of them is that how they handled the mile and eighth, how they finished in their final preps going a mile and eighth gives you confidence that they'll continue to improve stretching out.
Todd, Forte is the most accomplished horse in the race. He's going to be the favorite. How did he... after what he had to endure to win the Florida Derby and the wide trip, how has he progressed? What have you seen in the morning since that race?
He's a very straightforward professional horse to train. He's push button. You know, when Irad asked him to sit off of his workmate a little bit this morning, he's very comfortable doing that. When he pressed go, he quickly accelerated to go put a head in front of his workmate. And, he's just a very straightforward professional horse, and you know, like I said, what impressed me the most about the Florida Derby is what he did the final eighth of a mile, because not too many horses will you see make up that kind of ground that quickly late in a race.
Right. And to be able to handle anything, maybe what he'll have to handle in the Derby.
Yeah, I mean, there's no scenario like we'll see on Derby Day anywhere, you know, the fact that he handled good crowd at Florida Derby and extended saddling paddock and very extended post parade, you know, those kind of things. You know, I think the fact that he handled all that well gives us encouragement he'll do the same here.
And the fact that Irad's been on him on every race and knows him so well, added confidence, one of the greatest riders we're seeing right now.
Yeah, Irad's riding terrifically and you know, he has a good rapport with this horse. He knows him well. He's, as you said, ridden him every start and also been on him a lot in the morning, so you know, that's an added benefit.
When you're this far out, what are some of the things you're looking for when they hit the track?
Just, you know, like we saw this morning, the fact that they both got over the ground well, seemed to handle the footing extremely well, and, you know, you're looking for good energy and really just more of what we've been seeing from them all along.
I think you're... pretty much the same thing next week when you take them out again.
We'll probably do a little less next week. We'll play it by ear and see how the week goes.
Have you ever brought a horse here, a Derby horse here, and thought you didn't like the way they were getting over the track, and you thought this is going to be a long week or a long couple of weeks?
Yeah, we've had a few of those, and what's weird is had a couple of them, and they ran better than I thought they would, you know, and didn't seem to handle it that great, and then. You know, I remember Charming Kitten, who was pure turf horse and didn't seem to handle it at all, but we gave him a try and he actually handled it better in the afternoon than I thought. And, you know, we've all talked about that before. Sometimes the track's different on race day than it is preparation for it. But, you know, I remember Verrazano coming here and you could see, like, he was just, you know, bobbing his head every 3 or 4 strides. Just the ground was slipping away from him. That had me concerned. And same thing with Dunkirk when we were here and the forecast was rainy and you could tell he wasn't handling an off track as well as a fast one. And so, yeah, sometimes you can get some clues to that. And things can sometimes work out differently in the afternoon.
And you've been in the Derby as many times as you have. You still get excited when you get closer to the race.
It goes without saying, yeah. I mean, you know, watching the forecast really closely all week, worrying about which day to go. Glad we were able to get it in on the scheduled day. And the rain held off long enough. So, yeah, I mean, these, you know, these workouts become super, super important and keep you up at night waiting for them.
We always ask this question. The public still likes it. What did these two remind you of any other horses you brought up to the Derby, Todd? as far as Tapit Trice and Forte?
No, I mean, I think in both horses' case, they remind me a little bit of Always Dreaming, just that, you know, we had such a good schedule all winter and everything kind of just, you know, continued to fall into place. So, with the exception we got here with Always Dreaming, you got super aggressive, and these two colts have settled in perfectly.
And you brought him in a little bit earlier than maybe in the last few years, is that right?
No, it's the same as we've done the last few years.
Yeah.
Just kind of, you know, it's when you have a couple of them coming from different venues, we didn't want to ship Tapit Trice back to Florida and then back up here a week later, so we felt like the easiest thing to do was consolidate here.
And you came in with Always Dreaming as a favorite, and he got it done.
Yep. He's the only favorite we've run, so we'll see if go off favorite again, keep the streak alive.
Any word on a jockey for King's Barnes at this point?
Nothing firmed up yet, but I think we'll probably do something by the week, you know, by Sunday.
Going back to Friday morning, Todd Pletcher talking about some of his Derby contenders who had works on Friday morning. Similar situation at the Brad Cox Barn. Jenny Reese and company caught up with Brad Cox, and like Todd, he comes in kind of loaded into the Kentucky Derby and Derby weekend overall. So up next, some thoughts going again back to just after training hours with Brad Cox.
On the inside of verifying, Tyler was on verifying. Exercise rider Edwin was on a hit show. Broke off the 4.5, steady the first part. Hit show maybe just a touch aggressive on the inside, but overall good work. Finished up heads up. I think we had him 1 3/5, galloped out in 13 and 4. Overall, really good move. Wasn't looking to do as much with that set as we were with Angel of Empire and Jace's Road. They broke off the 5/8. They went 3/4 from the 5/8, 113 and 1. 126 and 2 on the 7/8. Good gallop out. All the riders were happy with them. We were happy with them. We liked what we saw. Just at this point, just trying to maintain fitness, make sure we got them, have them good and ready, and hopefully they come out of it in good order.
Are they all getting over the track the way you expect them to?
Yeah, I thought the track was really, really good this morning. We obviously breezed after the first break at 7:30. Super pleased with the condition of the track and how the horses handled it.
For the next work, would you try to tighten it to go harder, or you
set
it up?
We'll just kind of watch them throughout the week and kind of determine what we feel like they need. We're not going to go easy, but we're going to let them stretch their legs and let them do a little something, get a blow out of it. They got to go 1.25 miles, so I think they're all pretty fit. We're just trying to maintain fitness, but we want to make sure we've crossed all of our T's and dotted our I's.
What's this next couple of weeks like for you guys?
Look, it's a great time of year, obviously, especially here in Louisville and the horse racing world, but it's a lot. It's demanding, but it's great to be in this position that we're in as a stable. We've got good colts. We're hopefully they put on a good show, Kentucky Derby Day, and we got a group of fillies as well, Oaks Day. So it's exciting time, and looking forward to kind of getting it over with, but hopefully enjoying a little bit of it as well.
Can you tell us about anything that you've learned in the last recent years bringing horses like Mandaloon to Central Quality as your career has progressed? Just talk about
it's
that.
It's valuable to have that experience that we've had with the Central Quality Mandaloon, the three we ran last year. It does mean, I think you can look back and, think about how, at the end of the day, the bottom line with all this, the horses have to be doing well. That's the bottom line. If the horses are doing well, they show up and run their race, and you get beat, you wasn't good enough, and you get a good trip. If you show up and you feel like you're maybe not quite doing as well as could be, you're probably not going to run that well. So, it's all about having them fit, happy, and ready to run.
Brad, when you look at Angel of Empire, where he started as a 2-year-old to where he is now, have you had a horse make that big of a jump? I mean, is that pretty unprecedented?
We liked him in the beginning. He was a PA bred. That had a lot to do with him starting up at Indiana. He didn't run for as much money during the Ellis Park meets. He was always a horse that had a decent body on him, but early on he was just all legs, and we knew he was going to be better around two turns. We started him going 1 mile at Indiana. We liked him that day, and he has improved a tremendous amount throughout the winter. I think he kind of showed that he could play at the top level in the Smarty Jones when he ran second to Victory Formation, but galloped out really big. And, a lot of people noticed that. They said, this horse going 1 1/8 and beyond is going to be a serious player, and he's been able to pick up 2 victories going 1 1/8 coming into this Derby. And, he just looks like a horse that you know, is going to love the mound in eighth. And somebody in the barn said, you know, we're hopeful he can go a mile and a quarter and can do it quick enough. But he should definitely like the Belmont distance of a mile and a half. So we'll see. We'll see what happens.
Same with Hitcho early on. What did you kind of see from him? And then we won that first race at Kingland. Were you excited about
him? Yeah, we liked him a lot. He's a horse that showed a lot of talent, fast works leading up to that. It was a little bit of an odd run race. They went really slow. He was down on the inside. He split horses. The figures didn't come back extremely fast, so we kind of were scratching our head. His second race here going long, just didn't really get involved early, and then he kind of showed us at Oaklawn what we were expecting from him in his second run. And then, you know, for him to go on the road and win the Withers was a big move. We had some issues with actually getting him up there. They delayed the race 1 week, which actually worked out well for us in getting him there. Came back to the fairgrounds, and you know, he's a horse that's, you know, he's moved around a lot, and he always handles it. He always settles in, so I think that's something that will be beneficial to him with a big crowd here Derby Day.
You had four horses out there this morning. Do you get a chance to peek and look at, like, the Champion Forte when he was out there? He
worked there. I did see Tappet Strice, and he looked amazing from the quarter pole to the wire, what little I saw, but yeah, he looked amazing. But he was the only one I kind of was watching.
I was just wondering if you could try to watch these other horses.
If I had the opportunity, sure I would. And I'll probably watch a video of them later just to kind of see how they're moving and what they're doing.
Todd says that these last workouts will keep you up at night. Is that the case? Do you feel that way?
Yeah, when the weather doesn't look good, it will. Yeah, there's no doubt. I've checked the weather all week, I mean, off and on. And, you know, there was a shot that I was going to take verifying in Hitcho yesterday. Looked like the weather, the rain was delayed a little bit, so I decided just wait to today. And it worked out. It is. You know, you got to have it all. You know, the riders. It's a lot of moving parts, and it has to be organized.
What impresses you about Verify?
Well, physically, he's a beautiful horse. I mean, he's an outstanding looking individual. This horse is getting really good. I mean, I expect him to run well. I expect him to win the Bluegrass, and I thought he ran a winning race. He got beat by a very good horse. And his move this morning was really, really good. I was very pleased with the way the horse raced.
If the weather works out right, would you want to go next Friday?
It just depends. Maybe. Yeah, it just depends on the weather. I obviously didn't want to wait any longer than we waited. I even thought about going at 5:30 this morning, but like I said, the weather held off. So I'm thinking he may, you know, 21. I mean, it's there's a good shot. I mean, last year when they drew the race, the winner was 21. So, there's a good shot he'd get in, I'd say. But yeah, there's options. There's the Pat Day Mile, there's the Peter Pan, there's the Preakness. There's all sorts of races that we can back up to.
Would you do, if he's on the AE, would you enter? I mean, if you know you're going to be 21.
I talked that over with the Allball family, but I would say probably so, yeah. I mean, I don't know how many, do they just do two or four AEs?
Four.
I would say, I'd say all four spots would be filled. People get excited to run in this race. It's the only race in the world that you can be 140-1 and you're excited about.
That's the way if Chase's Road goes, is Flow on you?
That's the plan.
Again, thanks to Jenny Reese for running around there on the backstretch at Churchill, keeping us informed, some of the connections of the contenders, Derby and beyond, Derby weekend. There was Brad Cox going back to Friday after training hours. All right, as stated earlier, we'll head to a break when we come back. Opening day at Finger Lakes tomorrow, Monday. We'll catch up with Tony Kahlo, get some ideas on the opener right after this. Stay tuned.
Hello, everybody. Kevin Cox, the Brooklyn Cowboy here, telling you about a great Kentucky Derby promotion coming up at Capital OTB. From noon on April 28th to noon on May 3rd, 50 lucky patrons will be eligible to share in a $2,500 Kentucky Derby Day bankroll that I will be putting together. Over our last five bankroll bets, we have turned $2,000 in action to more than $4,511 in returns. That's a 126% profit for our team members. Here's how this one is going to work. 25 existing account holders will be chosen from online entries. 15 new accounts from April who have made at least $250 in wagers will also be chosen. And finally, the top 10 wagering accounts from April will also make the cut. The final team will be posted on May the 4th, and anybody that happens to be a lucky member of the team will have to make some action through their Capital OTB accounts on Derby Day. So get the ball rolling today so we can all make some bread on the first Saturday in May.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku. The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. Again, it's opening day at Finger Lakes tomorrow. So who better to reach out to and check in with than our friend Tony Kahlo, the announcer out at the Finger Lakes. Tony, good morning.
Good morning, Seth. That might be a little debatable. There's probably a lot more people that got better credentials than me, that's for sure. You're kind of slumming it when you have Tony Kahlo.
No, not at all. Always like to talk to Tony. Waking up from the long winter slumber and back at, have you been, that's a great question. Do you have to do anything to kind of prep for getting back into the announcing game after having a few months off? I mean, is it like, hey, drinking tea with honey or anything?
I did not drink a lot of tea with honey the last week or so. There's been a little bit of red wine with some other adult beverages thereafter.
Works.
But, you know, to be honest, Seth, luckily, Finger Lakes, we draw a week out, so I was able to get all the entries and the past performances a week ago. So you just kind of go through names and then hopefully when there they go, we're ready to go.
Very good. I was going to throw that in. They start tomorrow, and away they go on a Monday to kick things off. And speaking of Monday, just fill us in because I have the schedule in front of me, and it looks like the first 3 weeks, a couple of days, and then 3 weeks down the road, we'll switch to a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday schedule, correct?
Yep, back to that grind. 1:15 is the new post. We used to go 1:10, so we're going a little 5 minutes later. So 1:15, Monday and Tuesdays for the first 3 weeks, and then I believe on May 17th, I think that's the Wednesday that maybe we add Wednesdays, or that's the week we add Wednesdays. So, you know, unfortunately, since the pandemic, we're a little short on horses. And as you know, Seth, racetracks around the country, sometimes it's been difficult to field 4 and 5 day work weeks. So we're on a Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and that's what we've got going. So.
Well, the nice thing there is, and during the season, you throw in some nice stakes races up there, and, you know, the races like the New York Derby and whatnot. But the nice thing is, you get to get some eyeballs on, because nothing nicer, nothing more fun than a weekday stakes race.
Yeah, that is good. I remember when our old racing secretary, Bill Couch, who's now at Belterra, he started, I remember he put our New York Derby and New York Oaks on a weekday, and it might have been on the 4th of July. And anyway, that's when we started to notice, hey, this is probably a good trend to do. And, you know, this year, Indiana Grand, Horseshoe at Indianapolis, however they go by their name these days, I believe they're not racing on Monday, so that should help us. You know, it seemed like a lot of racetracks jumped on the Monday program the last few years. I know Monmouth had a Monday program towards the tail end of their season. So losing Horseshoe, Indianapolis, that'll be good for us. Hopefully that'll help our handle. Hopefully we can get some bigger size fields and draw some interest from people that want to wager on Finger Lakes. Finger Lakes has a bad misconception. People just think of it as a chalk fest. But I'll tell you what, you can sneak in some sneaky price horses. And one thing about these smaller racetracks, when you can get away from a couple of favorites, that's when you have a chance to blow up some sequences.
No, I totally agree. And I know a lot of our patrons like to play Finger Lakes. And one of those reasons is those pick races. Yeah, if you get by one or two of the favorites, I mean, I sit here and watch the the simulcast feed and talk about it when I'm doing the handicapping show and you guys are running. You get past a favorite or you get past a couple of favorites in a pick sequence, and that really blows things up.
Yeah, you have a chance to really hit a number. You can pull it. You have a good opportunity to take down the whole pool if you can just sneak by a couple of short price favorites. And I know it's difficult because you've got smaller fields and you've got powerful connections. The horses have solid past performances and they look like, how do they lose? But boy, I'll tell you what, last year we had a lot of short price favorites go down, and I'm always trying to go fishing to upset the chalk. I don't mind taking a 2-1, a 5-2, a lukewarm favorite, but when you got odds on, there's just no reward. Okay, great, honey, I hit the pick four, I got $24. You know what, that's not what I'm playing for, Seth.
Yeah, and bettors these days, I've been saying it for probably a year or so, bettors these days, when they find a favorite, man, they hammer it. You look, and yeah, you're talking a $5,000 claimer. There is no $5,000 claimer out there that deserves a 1-5 favorite or a 1-9 favorite. And so they can win, and they often do win. But, yeah, it's worth taking a little shot against sometimes those. And when you do get past them, you are nicely rewarded. Let's talk. You mentioned the connections. Let's talk the human side of things, because I pulled up last year's stats over here on Equibase. On the jockey side of thing, Andre Warre, he's been riding a little bit this winter down in New York, but he led things last year at the Finger Lakes at number 3. Familiar name out there, John Davila Jr. Jackie Davis was number 5 last year. She had a nice little meet. And on the trainer side of things, obviously the Engelharts take up 3 spots in the top 5, but you also have Buckley and Ferraro, Aquilano amongst the top trainers last year at the Finger Lakes. Who should people be watching amongst jockeys and trainers this year?
Well, my sneaky jock is Kevin Navarro. I really enjoyed watching Kevin ride last year. I thought he stepped his game up big time. He could be an up and comer. I don't know, where did he finish last year? Did he check in 4th maybe last year?
That's a good question. Yeah, you're exactly right. 4th last year.
Yeah, see, I still got it, Seth. This memory, geez, unbelievable. Give me a plate of food, I'm like an elephant. I tell you what, but yeah, no, I really have been impressed with Kevin. He's very patient. He's very strong. He's one of my top jocks to watch. I'm hoping he can make another move forward and actually get a run there. I think he's ultra talented. And they're all good. There's a lot of good jockeys from top to bottom. You've mentioned the bigger names, but I think Kevin falls a little bit under the radar, and he's one to keep an eye on. That'd be my sneaky jock of the season.
And who's the barber? I can't remember, but I've heard you call the name under the line.
Oh, yeah. The barber is Emmanuel Di Diego. He's been riding here since I got here. He already came with a nickname. I don't know if he still does, but he used to cut a lot of the grooms and fellow jockeys. He'd be cutting their hair on the backside on the days off. So he was the barber, and he is the barber.
I always laugh when he comes under the line and you give the call. And just talking about somebody who's not at the Finger Lakes anymore, but how about you guys out there proud of a guy who started at the Finger Lakes? But how about Raylu Gutierrez from that area out there? And started things out and raced for a little while at the Finger Lakes, but winds up with a meet title at the fairgrounds this year.
Yeah, everybody's really, really thrilled for Raylu. He's a great kid. I've known him for a few years, obviously, and nothing but respect for him. I'm so proud of him and so happy for his success. He's so charismatic. He's ultra intelligent, obviously, getting his degree before pursuing his jockey's career. And, just a great kid. Kind of ironic, though, when I was calling some races this winter for a few days at Turfway, he had one race, and Turfway had a very tricky angle for the photo. It's the first photo I've missed in years, and who was the winning jockey that stung it to me? Raylu, and believe me, he let it be known. He's like, come on, Kayla, How did you not think I won it? I swear, I've watched that replay 1,000 times. I still don't know how Macadamia didn't win that race, but oh well. But he was all pumped up. He's a great kid, and I'm so happy for him. Everybody is. He deserves all his success.
Yeah, I mean, he spent a little time at Saratoga a few years ago, and I didn't really get to interact with him, but I certainly watched from afar, and he does seem like just a really nice kid, and as you say, charismatic and easy to root for. So it's fun to see him down at the fairgrounds this year have such a great meet. And you mentioned Turfway. You did a great job down there. I will ask you as an announcer, is calling races at night a big difference or no?
Without a doubt, especially as you get older. When I was younger, I used to call a lot of night races at Bay Meadows, and even Golden Gate implemented some night races, and it was always tricky then, but this time it was even, obviously with a newer circuit and so many horses, that was extremely challenging. But nighttime racing is definitely tricky, and if I ever get to call nighttime races again, I'll definitely be investing in a new pair of binoculars.
Yeah, well, you did a great job, and I know on social media people were patting you on the back, and deservedly so. It was fun to listen to you out there for a few days.
It was very difficult, Seth. I'm not going to try to sugarcoat it. I was very proud with my results. I don't think it was anything near my best of work, but under the circumstances rolling in there, it was difficult, and I held my head up high leaving.
Yeah, as you should. I enjoyed listening to you. It was fun to hear you out there at a different venue. But tomorrow, back at the Flakes, and you do some handicapping as well out there, and so I thought we would tip in and get some thoughts on tomorrow's races, and we'll start things out. Race number two, maiden specials, and as has been the way to do it at the Finger Lakes for years now, they're 4.5 furlongs for a while, and that's the case in the second tomorrow. What did you see in race number two on Monday?
Yeah, that is the Finger Lakes tradition. I remember when I first got here, I was like, what? We're going to run 4.5 furlongs for what? How many days in a row? Come on. Somebody throw a 5.5 in there on me. Race two is a cool little race. I didn't talk about the opener. I think Jeremiah and Andre are going to win the opener with a short price named Crosstalk. Second race is a very competitive maiden special weight race. Here's my theory. I think they're going to bet the 1, 4, and 5. Superb Surprise took a lot of money in his debut at Aqueduct in the middle of March. Had some nice works leading up to it. I mean, he was 5-1 in a field of 8. That's taking real money in a maiden special weight, state bred at Aqueduct. Salty affair. This horse is going to take a lot of money. Didn't run a jump. Doesn't have another workout since he raced. That's a negative for me. The horse is going on 5 weeks. No workout. I know Paul doesn't put works in his horses. Anyway, I think they're going to bet that horse. They're going to bet the 4, obviously. Lieutenant Sam, the dynamic duo, Chris Engelhardt, John Davila, a horse who showed speed in a maiden 25 at Aqueduct in early February. I think they'll also bet the 5 Steerage, even though Steerage's best races are either on turf or over a sealed racetrack. I could see them betting that horse also. My sleeper, my sneaky horse in race 2 is the 6, Noah's Destiny. That girl, Jackie Davis. Nice bullet work on the 7th of April. Here's what I like. The horse debuts, doesn't run much, showed a little bit of pace, fade. Comes back very, very quick. I'm huge into spacing. Horses coming back quick 14 days after a debut run. Shows decent early foot. The interior fractions stack well up against this group. A nice outside post. Gets Lasix for the first time. Gets good spacing. Good solid drill. I think this horse is sneaky at a price. That'll be my top selection 6. Noah's Destiny in race 2.
I like it. 10-1 on the morning line. What I particularly like, and you mentioned it, that little bullet work coming in. Best of 31. Maybe tips their hand a little bit. We're going to talk
about the interior fractions. The half mile split stacks up very nicely. The horse is only 4 lengths off of 46-2. It stacks up against this group with an outside post. That horse is sneaky, fans.
I like it. We're going to talk about a couple other races, but you and I were talking off the air, and you do want to mention the third race kicks off the pick 6. And there's a little twist this year with the pick 6 out there?
Yeah, pretty cool little twist. You know, I know the jackpot sequences are falling out of favor around the country, and we have jumped on board. We are getting rid of our 20-cent jackpot pick 6, and we are implementing a $1 traditional pick 6. So that's a good bet for fans. This one has a little bit of possibilities if we can get a day or 2 day carryover to get a nice little $20,000-$30,000 score maybe. So look for that. 75. I think I saw it that 75%. if nobody has all six, 75% carries over, and then we pay out on the rest of the 25% for five or four out of six. So take a look at that. Keep an eye on it. Looks like the two, Horn of Plenty, is a pretty logical single to start the sequence. The horse wins against Open 16. It's Santa Anita. Hard to fault the resume there. So dollar pick six, fans. Take advantage. Enjoy it.
I got a root for the one, however, Father Walsh. It's our friend Roddy Valenti.
Yeah, Roddy probably will send me a text. I heard you on Capital OTB and you threw no love for my horse. Way to go, Kalo. How quickly you forget about me.
All right.
He's always shooting me a little text here and there, busting my chops.
I hear from him as well. Roddy's great. Sixth race today at the Finger Lakes, or tomorrow at the Finger Lakes. Allowance non-winners to two lifetime. Again, we're at the 4.5 furlongs for a while out there. What did you see in race number six?
You know, race six is a nice little race, no question about it. A lot of horses have some upside. JD Advantage looks pretty strong. You have to think of that debut run in late January over a fast racetrack. That race is good enough to be very competitive, if not just outright win this affair. I'm willing to forgive the sealed sloppy racetrack. I would definitely use her. You know, two Jackson Avenue impressed me with her first two runs. You've got Amore Fire. Forever Amy probably will take a lot of money. Lockbox won her debut at Finger Lakes, ran some competitive races. The horse that was catching my eye, the three-year-old filly, is the four, because you're pretty. Look at that debut run. Monstrous run. I know it was over a sealed racetrack, sealed sloppy track, but when you can win by nearly 10 lengths in your debut run, worth noting. Then comes back and runs in a good allowance race at Delaware on relatively short notice, 23 days after the debut run. Ran a very competitive third. The filly that won Bound by Destiny exited that affair and won back-to-back stakes races at Delaware before putting in a clunker. She is 4-for-5 in her career with a $1.38. So she ran up against a good one. This one has some nice drills. I like the fact that she was already training at Belmont before she shifted back to Finger Lakes. I like the fact she has a 5-furlong drill, racing at 4.5 furlongs. Because You're Pretty will be my top pick. If I'm playing the pick six, I'd also use the one.
Waiting for the call, too. Waiting for you get the five in the mix. Boobala. You got to like that.
Yeah, that's a cool little name. Boobala.
Seventh race.
The barber. Boobala.
The seventh race tomorrow. Calendar condition allowance runners. Again, going the 4.5. What did you see in race number seven?
You know, race seven's a cool race. It's obviously our opening day feature, the opening day dash. It features some of the better stakes horses on the grounds. You've got Ladies Golden Guy, and you also have Dr. Blarney. Hard not to like Dr. Blarney, no question about him. Absolute racehorse. I'll look at his credentials, 765 in the bank, 26-for-41. You know, Ladies Golden Guy is probably, in my opinion, the horse to beat. I'm working with a proof, but I saw on the Equibase and DRF work tabs earlier this week, the horse put in a 46 bullet. I thought he was our best sprinter on the grounds last year. You probably got to go through him. I would definitely use Dr. Blarney and him. My upset pick will be the two, Riders Regret. I'm always trying to go fishing. You know that, Seth. Here's the horse who ran second in the George Barker last year. Has a good record at Finger Lakes. 9 appearances, 3 wins, 5 seconds. The horse has some good early foot. I don't know if he's quite as good as Blarney, Dr. Blarney, and Ladies Golden Guy. But with all of his foundation built up this winter, shortening to 4.5, I find him very dangerous. And he'll be my top pick trying to post the upset. But I'm definitely using all three playing the pick six.
Yeah, you're exactly right, Ladies Golden Guy. My PPs are showing that 46-1 bullet. And also Dr. Blarney, 10 years old, but comes in sporting two bullet works coming into this. So at 10, the venerable Dr. Blarney still on his toes. That seventh tomorrow is going to be a lot of fun. And it was a lot of fun.
The one thing I like to do early in the season, too, and I want the fans, you know, foundation is really big. So keep an eye on that. See how that plays out. The horses that have been racing a little bit this winter obviously have advantages over the comebackers. You know, Dr. Blarney only has the two recorded workouts. Maybe has another one that I'm missing because I'm working with a proof. Ladies Golden Guy. That's why I give Riders Regret a little upset chance with all that foundation.
Yeah, Dr. Blarney did have one on April 3rd as well. So he's coming in with three works, including the two bullets. So, the 10-year-old coming in a little bit live. Tony, it's been great. Always fun. And we're going to have you plugged in on Sundays, talk a little Monday action as we go forward here. Give some folks some thoughts on the Finger Lakes action. Always appreciate the input. And, again, Tony, it was a lot of fun. We'll talk again.
Thanks a lot, Seth. As always, great talking with you, my friend.
Appreciate it. Tony Kalo, track announcer, and more out at the Finger Lakes. And, again, they open the season tomorrow. Should be a lot of fun. I know a lot of our patrons enjoy the Finger Lakes. Again, first 3 weeks, it'll be Monday and Tuesday. And then starting that week of May 15th, they'll kick off to the three-day schedule, Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. And, again, we'll have Tony plugged in regularly to talk some Finger Lakes action. Looking forward to that as well. All right, that'll wrap things up for Racing Across America on this Sunday morning. But again, back in about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for Sunday afternoon. Again, this afternoon I'll be looking at Aqueduct, Keeneland, Oaklawn. And again, according to the Andy Serling tweet earlier, Aqueduct off the turf today. So make note of that and check any changes and scratches going forward. We'll have that info as well this afternoon. But going to wrap it up. Really appreciate folks tuning in, as always. Hopefully we gave you out some good info on this Sunday morning. But again, we will be back just about an hour and a half or so with OTB Live for a Sunday afternoon. So we'll see you then. We would like to thank Woodbine for their sponsorship of this program and some of the other programming and events here at Capital OTB. Woodbine's 2023 Thoroughbred Stakes program has more than $17 million in purses, including 39 graded stakes, 5 grade 1 events, and 2 $1 million classics, the King's Plate and the Woodbine Mile. Woodbine, now through December, great racing north of the border.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.